Welcome to Frankly Speaking. Today's program addresses the subject of city water systems. It's wet, but is it fit to drink? I'm Helen Ackerman for George Mason University. Reach out your hand, turn the tap, and out it comes. Clean, drinkable water. We do it every day and take this very recent miracle entirely for granted. It's always there, water for drinking, cooking, washing, and sewage disposal. And unless it's been a long, hot summer, it's there in seemingly inexhaustible quantities. But there are enormous problems in water supply, especially in a big city. Increasing urbanization affects water runoff and water purity. It increases the strain on sewage systems and turns attractive recreational lakes into swamps. With us today to talk about our water problems and possible solutions is Christian Jones, Assistant Professor of Biology at George Mason University. Chris, what's the single biggest problem facing urban water systems today?
Well, it's probably the conflict between development and clean water, and this takes many forms. Certainly in terms of our drinking water, we have a conflict between developing the watersheds that the drain into the urban lake and yet maintaining the water in a quality which is suitable for drinking. I think this is probably, in all of its facets, the toughest problem today.
What other aspects are there to an urban water system? I always just think of drinking water, but there are other sides to it as well.
Well, when you think about how you use water, it's in many and varied ways. We all enjoy spending a day on a lake, and even if we don't go out on the lake, at least having a picnic alongside the lake, we enjoy the nice blue color, if such can exist, and we enjoy taking a walk along a stream, which is also another aquatic habitat. We also use the water to carry away our waste. We use the water to do a lot of things in the home besides just drinking. In fact, only about 5% of the water in the home is used for drinking. We use the water in industrial processes. Quite a number of uses in addition to just drinking.
What are some of the other problems in these areas then? For instance, sewage. Where are we running into difficulties there?
Well, sewage in the Northern Virginia area, in terms of lakes, is a problem whose characteristics have changed over the past few years. Originally, one of the biggest problems with sewage, and it still is to some extent in the Potomac, is dissolved oxygen depletion resulting from decomposition of the organic matter in the sewage. Now we're able to treat this organic matter so that it is basically decomposed in a sewage treatment plant and is then released into the water very low in decomposable matter. Now our problem is that there remains in this water plant nutrients, fertilizers if you will, which are capable of causing extreme increases in algal growth in the water. This causes the water to turn that pea green color, and these algae can often release substances of bad taste into the water and make it harder to clean up for use. I guess in addition to that, in the urban areas, we tend to get a lot more silt into the reservoir, which makes it harder to clean the water. And sometimes we can get runoff of heavy metals, particularly if there are any industry in the drainage area.
Do you get heavy metal from street drain-off too?
Yes, there's a lot of lead and zinc in street runoff from urban areas, and this seems to be a pretty common occurrence. It's not clear exactly where all of this zinc and lead is coming from, but it seems to be associated with vehicular traffic.
Can you get it out of the water once it's in?
Well, I suppose that it's possible. I don't know of any place where they've actually experienced continuous high levels of heavy metals in their drinking water. And most of the heavy metals end up in the sediments. This has not really materialized as a problem as yet. It's just something that looms on the horizon.
Well, I guess that would be one of the dangers involved in building on a watershed. Why else shouldn't you build on a watershed? I know in Fairfax County in particular that is an issue that seems to be coming more and more to the fore as the county grows so quickly.
Well, I think the principal problems are increased siltation of the reservoir and these plant nutrients running off into the reservoir and causing algal blooms. Those are the reasons that are motivating Fairfax County at this point.
Chris, you've done quite a bit of work on our recreational lakes in this area, and as a problem, the silting up of lakes doesn't really compare to the problem of problems that affect our water supply, but it would be a real shame to lose our lakes. What is the situation where they're concerned?
Well, at the moment, there are several reservoirs in Fairfax County which are in either county parks or extensively used recreationally that are in danger of silting up. Lake Accotink is pretty well silted up at this point. It is only about half of its original depth and is still gaining sediment rapidly. Lake Fairfax is also silting up. Basically, what we have is a situation where the drainage areas of these lakes or reservoirs, if you will, are so huge that the amount of sediment coming through these lakes, even under fairly pristine conditions, is such that they will silt up within 20 to 30 years. So we're basically just going to have to keep dredging them, probably.
That's really the only solution to the silting problem?
Well, the interval of dredging can be manipulated by decreasing sediment runoffs, and dredging costs an awful lot of money. So to the extent that we can keep the sediments out of our reservoirs, this will decrease the costs of cleanup. I think, you know, eventually most of these will have to be dredged anyway, but you're talking about if we have adequate controls on sediment, maybe dredging every 50 years. If we don't, maybe every 5 to 10 years. So you're talking about a great increase in costs and with no increase in benefits.
Now, you're using the term reservoir when you talk about Lake Fairfax and Lake Accotink. Are they actually reservoirs that we use the water from, or are they just recreational?
They're just recreational. I'm using the term reservoir to mean a man-made lake.
Oh, I see. Is the siltation problem with those lakes caused because of the buildup around them? If they were left in their natural state, would they still tend to silt up, or is it a man-made problem?
It's a man-accentuated problem. The silting would be much slower if, for example, they were forested watersheds. The activities of man, particularly the construction phase of any development, imports an extremely high amount of sediments into the lakes. So it exaggerates the problem tremendously.
We talk about siltation and the problems of urbanization around lakes. What is the mechanism, though, that makes the difference between a forested watershed and a paved watershed? Why is there a problem if a large area is paved? Because there are houses with gardens all around these places. It's not as though the whole thing is paved.
Well, the first problem that results is during the development stage, much, if not all, of the ground surface is disturbed. As long as there's a continuous plant cover on the land surface, the amount of soil being eroded is very small. And this is a basic function of the plant cover, and this is one of its great values. As soon as the plant surface, the ground surface is disturbed, as we can see anywhere, if you look where there is development, the soil is laying barren. And in this condition, if we have a thunderstorm, a heavy rain, you'll see the water running off of this area will turn bright or very markedly brown. And this, of course, means that it's laden with sediments, and it's basically all of the water in a watershed ends up above a lake, ends up in the lake. So all of this sediment ends up in the lake. Now, once we pass this construction phase, which is extremely damaging in terms of sediments, we then enter a stable urban phase. In this condition, we have large surface areas in the basin that are paved. This pavement results in, instead of the water penetrating the ground and slowly running off, it hits the pavement and rapidly reaches the storm sewer, moving at a rapid rate over the pavement. The pavement itself is covered with dust and fallout from the air and materials falling off vehicles. And if you've ever looked closely at the pavement, you see it's just covered with stuff. And this rapid movement of water across the pavement suspends these particulates. They go into the storm sewer and are flushed rapidly into the lake. In the meantime, the water volume of water reaching the stream itself increases. And this volume of water, being much greater than the stream is accustomed to carrying, will erode the banks of the stream and further increase silt or sediment input into a lake which is below this area. If you look at a developed watershed, we'll see anywhere from 20 to about 50% of the surface area is paved. So there's it may not seem like it, but it's a pretty large percentage paved.
A lot of our reservoirs are fenced off. Others are open for recreation. And now I'm using reservoir in terms of a holding place for drinking water. Why do people make these different decisions about the use of reservoirs?
Well, there are a number of factors. In terms of keeping the water of a high enough quality for drinking, in a small water holding reservoir like we have in the district, any use of this water would be a sufficient contamination. And in fact, if any use were allowed, the use in the district would be extensive and intensive. Therefore, they've chosen not to allow that reservoir to be used. On the other hand, something on the order of the Occoquan Reservoir is so large and so much water, and the use would be relatively less extensive because the population base is not there to pressure that use. And so it is boating and fishing are allowed on that reservoir because there's enough dilution involved. And then when the water is cleaned up, of course, it is they are able to take out what small amounts are put in.
It always amazes me that they allow the use of power boats, because it seems to me the stuff from an engine would be particularly bad to get into your water supply. But the idea is that it's diluted enough to not to bother you, is that
it's diluted and treated, and most of that oily stuff ends up in the sediments anyway. So but when you think of the other uses in the basin, a few motorboats, I mean, when you think of the trucks and the cars and everything else dropping oil into the basin and that washing in, it's really sort of a drop in the bucket, so to speak.
Chris, thank you very much for being with us today.
Okay, I enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Pat Ping. For information about our guests, please call area code 703-323-2138. That's 703-323-2138. I'm Helen Ackerman for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.